Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Broadcasting live from an undisclosed location in the universe. Welcome to WithInsightsRadio.com, your source for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. With your hosts, Iggy Garcia, David Tucros. Call! The call number is 646-595-3440. Kick back and relax and enjoy the show.
Welcome to WithInsightsRadio.com. I am one of your hosts, Iggy Garcia.
And I am the other one of your hosts, David Tucros.
And we also have a guest in the chat room. And actually, she's in studio. And she's going to come to our show and chime in from time to time. So welcome to the show, Moni.
Thank you very much, Iggy.
All right.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. So like we always do, we just kind of in a secret location, hiding somewhere in the universe so no one knows exactly where we're at. But, you know, that's the fun part about our show. You know, we are who we are, and we are part of the Galactic Alliance, or whatever you want to call us. So, so we had a pretty busy weekend, and we all pretty much had fun. And so that's kind of where we always start. So I'll let David kind of take from there where he's been.
Okay. Well, first of all, it's been a while. I hope everyone can hear me because we just switched headsets. So in the chat room, just let me know if I'm not coming through loud and clear. But, yeah, it's been a little while since we've actually sat down across from each other here at the secret location.
Yeah.
You know, because you've been doing your soccer coaching, which basically takes place from the end of August until now, and it's tournament time. So very exciting time for you.
You know, it's amazing. That was August.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like 3 months, man, of my life I dedicate to these little kids, you know.
Yeah, and that's great. That's great. That gives you an outlet for, you know, your interest in experience with soccer. So.
And I have a little kid now, a little grandson.
Oh, yeah, yeah. A little bambino.
Little bambino added
to the Garcia family.
Little Iggy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, his name is Milano, and we want to welcome him to planet Earth one more time.
Mm-hmm. There we are. We need old souls and new bodies. And let's see, so then while you were been busy on Monday nights, Mark and I have been hosting the show for about 3 weeks, maybe four, sometimes off and on. So he's probably happy to have a night off himself. Okay. So, boy, we back up a couple weeks because we weren't on live last week. We had a show.
No. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
It was a pre-recorded show.
So backing up a couple weeks, we had our Ash Cave drumming.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Which was great. You know, we had a wonderful group of people come out and just drum and dance and commune together in that wonderful special place where we rediscovered ourselves.
Yeah, we've been going there, what, how many years now?
It's since 2010, so it's coming up on 5. Yeah,
that's pretty cool.
I think with the February one, it's going to be 5 years.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah,
time sure flies on that.
I know.
It's beautiful. Yeah. I mean, when we do things, it's just like, you know, we had a chapter meeting last night, you know, a Congregational chapter meeting with the Nemenha, and we were discussing, you know, things we wanted to do, talked about the things we did in Great Council, how to use what a talking feather was and, you know, what a talking stick was and the protocols of actually honoring and respecting people's time to speak and time to share and not interrupting. Because I wouldn't want to see you club anybody.
No, it's all symbolic.
Yeah,
right,
it's all symbolic at the moment.
Yeah, we take that very seriously. You know, when we go into meetings, you know, we want every voice to be heard. We don't want someone to be overspoken or, you know, dominated by the conversation. So it's important. Everyone has a voice. And that's basically my job as a NIPI is to moderate the discussion, open the ceremony, close the ceremony, and help reach whatever, you know, consensus on things if we have a disagreement. But it was interesting because as the discussion unfolded, we were joined by a group of people that we've just become acquainted with and really have resonated with and have a lot of commonality with, and that's Tetabo. They are a group of people from the Dayton area that have a community of their own and their own ways, dancing, performing, they're
games.
Developing a culture
mm-hmm.
in our modern age, you know. So it's interesting to be, to see that come out. So they were with us as we were having our chapter house meeting after we did the saging and the pipe ceremony. Discussion began, and we found a lot of things in common. You know,
mm-hmm.
as I was watching and listening, I just so many things that I was interested in and had wanted to say were being said anyway. You know, so it was good to see and hear that.
Yeah, it was beautiful to see young people doing and searching and working on creating something that's very organic and to the earth and very spiritual. It kind of reminded me of us when we were in the early stages of our chapter house,
mm-hmm.
as we were all spiritually adopted. And I see these young people coming with these amazing ideas and these amazing things that they've created.
Right. Yeah.
And, through their masks and, you know, talking about their demons and how they work through them and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Right.
And, you know, they were open enough to come and listen to the message that we had to share about Nemenha,
right?
About the condor eagle that we so dearly care about, and the prophecies of that. And it was almost like it was a good fit for them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they made a really good statement, you know. You know, they wanted to share, you know, their knowledge and learn from the big tree, you know, be a, you know, the underlying, you know, part, another root growing from that.
Yeah.
And almost like it would be a different society within that. So, because they have their own beliefs in a way and structure,
mm-hmm.
which is really beautiful.
Yeah, but we can learn from each other.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and grow together, and that's what's that is what's beautiful.
And that's kind of where it takes us to our next step here with our guest today.
Yeah.
And hopefully our guest, who is one of our friends,
mm-hmm.
Jonathan Landis, he's actually the EPMC of the Native American Church.
What is an EPMC?
He's the elected principal medicine chief of the Nemenha.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to be sharing his thoughts with us. And I hope he comes on at least once a month to share, so at least that way other Nemenha who are in a different part of the country, a different part of the world, because this is a worldwide show,
right.
might be a good avenue for him to check in from time to time.
Sure, yeah.
And share. So without further ado, I want to welcome him to the show, and then we'll just pick his brain.
Okay.
And, you know, we're going to act like we don't know anything, because our listeners really don't. Welcome to the show, Chief.
Hey, thank you, Chief.
How are you?
It's my
Welcome.
Pleasure to be aboard.
Awesome.
Great. All right. Well, I guess we can just start by saying, what is Nemenha?
Nemenha is quite literally a traditional, indigenous traditional organization specifically created to produce patterns of language and cultural avenues through which people can explore natural healing without fear of persecution necessarily, where they can explore spirituality without fear of incrimination, discrimination, where they can take on themselves a sense of indigenous values without having to worry about whether they're going to be stepping on anybody else's toes, whether they're stepping on the Sioux's toes or the Crow's toes or, you know, the toes of our good friends in Tibet. You know, we are an organization unto ourselves, and we explore the tenets of indigenous religion and natural healing in our own fashion as a congregation, as a unit.
Very good. Now, I would say at the core of the Nemenha, we have five values. Can you explain those? Or a mission?
Yes. Yeah, it is the fivefold mission. That's what we call it. And it is quite literally the tenets of healing the individual. And everything we deal with is healing. But healing the individual, healing the family, healing community, healing society, and healing the earth. All of us in Nemenha are committed to any one or any number or all of them in this mission. Any of those points in this mission is something that we all share.
Very good.
Yeah. So I'm glad you're on board and sharing your thoughts with us, because, you know, your father was once EPMC of the Nemenha, and that's kind of how I came aboard.
Mm-hmm.
And joined the group because of his vision and his personality. Just for me, you know, captured me and, you know, and engulfed me to learn more about it. Not that you don't, Chief, but your dad's funny. You know, we're kind of close in age, so. But it was really cool to actually see somebody sharing their belief system the way he was and so passionate about it. And, you know, when I sat there and I was like, man, this is amazing. This is an opportunity for me to share my beliefs with the world, and this is an opportunity to learn someone else's ways. Because I remember when we first started, it was about the Terranus theories and stuff and learning about, you know, Terranus versus the germ theorists and stuff, and it was just like the coolest thing. You know, you'd go around and you'd be a roadman and you share all your ideas. So, you know, I know we have evolved a lot from that point. We've grown exponentially. You know, we've gone through our growing pains, and we've gone through, you know, our good days and bad days like any organization. But right now we're really in a flux to totally explode and just bring in great new people and open the fold. And, you know, we've been working hard. What's new at Nemenha now, something that you would like to share about what we're doing? I know you gave a little bit a background about it, but tell us something that is that you feel is very important that the world needs to know, and also the people who are in our organization listening to this program tonight.
Well, there are a few reasons why people are attracted to Nemenha, and one of them is our code of ethics. But there are lots of different codes of ethics for lots of different peoples and cultures. But there is something that we're taught in modern society that Nemenha decries, and that is that you can't have consensus amongst people. You must always have majorities and minorities. You must always have disagreements, and somebody is able to overrule somebody else. And one of the biggest elements of Nemenha that keeps me fired up and keeps me going and is a great attraction for a lot of people is that we have true consensus council in Nemenha, where everyone is in agreement. We have true consensus. So, and we do this administratively. We do this in our daily lives, our daily walk and talk. We have, what's new is we have extended a great deal of the kinds of authorities, the kind of administration that used to be handled really high up in the admin, up in the chief levels. We've extended that down to local levels, local administrations, our local chiefs down in our chapters and in our societies. And we've worked hard over the last couple of years to get to where just everyone can engage in this consensus system and feel like they belong, feel like they're not going to be butting heads with a minority or a majority. They can just sit together as one in ceremony and have very constructive debate, even sometimes on highly sensitive issues. In a Nemenha setting, we don't have to worry about hurting each other necessarily because everyone is mindful.
That's what walk sacred and talk sacred is all about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you enter into the Nemenha, and that is through the doorway of spiritual adoption. I'm sure people have questions about that and what that means and where that comes from. So if you'd like to address that for a couple of minutes for us.
Oh, sure. No problem. Spiritual adoption is very simply an ancient Native American custom, and it's not just Native American. It is a custom that's been had indigenously in multiple cultures across the world. It is the making of relations. It's the acknowledgement of an individual as blood of my blood and bone of my bone, all my relations. And we do this formally through a ceremony called spiritual adoption. And in Nemenha, the individual who performs that ceremony is the president of our church, into whose family we all enter. He literally extends his family, our family, into yours, into the member who's entering, joining, and that member adds their heritage into ours and makes one family. And there's a lot of heritage, there's a lot of ancestry built into this. And we literally are in the Menha through spiritual adoption. We are all of us siblings.
Mm-hmm. What's up, bro?
He wants to borrow your car for the night.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome. You know, and that goes back to Chief Joseph, who is an ancestor of Chief Cloud Piler and yourself. And his practice in this example or this instance was to bring people into his family, his tribe, if you will, through spiritual adoption. And that's really the tradition that we're carrying mm-hmm. forward with the Nemenha, is to extend that to everyone. And it's beautiful. I mean, it is that we are just not just members of an organization, but we're truly family in that regard, you know. And you can feel it. You know that. You know, when we come together, it's a family reunion.
It really is, yes. Yeah. And Chief Joseph had to do that because for them and their people and their time, family and tribe was survival, and especially during the war period, with so many men being lost in the war, there were so many fatherless children. The head of the clan, the head of the tribe, was the most prominent and protective figure. And in order to protect the stability of that family, to make sure they all stayed one people, Chief Joseph did that. He would spiritually adopt, and it was actually a kin rite. But he would spiritually adopt children from orphaned families into his own family to ensure that those children had a family to live in, whether they were going to stay in that tribe or not, because they were all who survived was shipped off to various reservations, and Chief Joseph himself never got to return to his family, but they were all part of his family, and that itself was unifying. We try to carry on that tradition ourselves
mm-hmm.
amongst the Menha.
Awesome. Okay, I'd like to, maybe you can explain to people what Native American church means, because I know even through all the growing that we've gone through, there's been people, you know, we used to be a band at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, so maybe explain to people what a church is, because then there's a lot of confusion about who we are,
yeah, I think
how
the
we
word
fit
church
in.
Itself carries yeah. some baggage mm-hmm. with it, too, that people need an explanation.
And like I said, we're going to ask questions like yeah. we don't know. We yeah. know the answers, but for our listeners.
Well, Native American church is there's a couple of ways that it's used. One is that it's a Native American church because it's a church with Native American ideals and Native American indigenous values, an attempt at restoring Native American indigenous practices. That is the Native American Church of Nemenha. That is one of our ongoing missions, is to make that process of restoration possible. And because the heritage, the lineage that travels to us through our Tektuectimt, through our president of the church and his bloodline, it's very Native American. I mean, mm-hmm. it's that heritage is very specifically Native American. So when the Great Council of Nemenha decided that it would create a specific church, it was a Native American church because of the heritage that came along with it. Now, there are other Native American churches out there, and most of them are formed by various tribal elders or tribal medicine men from different organizations or tribes. Most of them involve the use of peyote or ayahuasca, and they were literally specifically formed to protect those ceremonies from Congress. That's what the Native American church that you can go online and find out all about. The Native American church was specifically created for that purpose, to protect the ceremony of peyote from becoming a scheduled narcotic that the Native Americans couldn't use. But because of the freedom of religion, the laws regarding freedom of religion in the United States, because they formed a formal church with tenets and principles and formal practices, the Congress ruled in their favor and created laws by which they could practice their healing ceremonies, their peyote ceremonies. And so that's the root of the use of the word Native American church. Nowadays, you know, that was almost 100 years ago. Nowadays, a Native American church makes reference to a very similar process where a church is attempting to protect certain essential elements of its religious practices. And if those practices and principles are Native American in origin, then we designate ourselves a Native American church. So there are actually many Native American churches within the United States alone, and a few of them have outreaching influence into other nations.
Mm-hmm. So our Native American church basically was born from a blessing by Chief Fool's Bull, is that correct? And then the Aklavan Native American church was born, and then we are spun off from them. Now, you mentioned about peyote and ayahuasca. In the Nemenha, we don't practice that just because we stay away from anything that is federally regulated and is seen as an illegal substance, I guess you could say. So we don't involve
primarily,
ourselves.
Primarily, yes. We have always made it a habit to, in the best interest of our members and in the spirit of Wiccan, in the spirit of intuition and divine revelation, we've tried to keep ourselves ahead of the changes, the legal changes that were at play. And we issued policy, I don't know how many years ago, regarding the use of illicit substances. We saw the winds changing. We saw various Native American churches starting to dive into cannabis and ayahuasca, and there had been some successes in the past, but people were becoming reckless, and it was drawing a lot of attention. We are natural healers with a large apothecary. Every one of us has a large apothecary of medicines that we use, and for our church, it was not feasible to jeopardize all the other liberties that we could enjoy as a church, as ministers, by focusing on an illicit substance. So we issued policy that literally restricts Nemenha ministers from using or distributing illicit substances in or out of ceremony if those substances are, number one, illicit, illegal, and also if they have a history of injurious abuse. We're very particular about that. And unfortunately, there are Native American churches, some of which we have been affiliated with and are no longer, that are immersed in the war on cannabis and ayahuasca, and there are people suffering because of that battle, unfortunately. Nemenha had the foresight years ago to pull our members out of the battle before it even begun on our front. We try to maintain that pattern.
Right. Well, that segues me right into what I was going to ask you. Pattern language, you mentioned that earlier about pattern language. Explain a little bit what pattern language is and why it's so important.
Well, the importance of pattern language is twofold. Those of us who have been in Nemenha for a long time, like I've been in Nemenha since its inception, and Iggy, Chief, you've been in for a very, very long time. Some of these practices become second nature to us, and we consider that a pattern language. But in the legal system that exists today, a pattern language is extremely important. You know, and some of the things that you've studied in our curriculum, that all our ministers study, we learn about court cases where some people throw out a religious defense. Well, I can believe, I can practice what I want to because it's my religion. And the court was never, as you know, the court was not allowed to say your religion is true or no, your religion was not true. But they could look at the individual's pattern language, pattern of behavior, and ascertain whether that person was sincere in the practice of their religion. Nemenha obsesses with providing vehicles and venues and training and practices that protect our members, our ministers, in the practice of natural healing, a lot of times where otherwise it's illegal in various states. but we make it our pattern language. And like the ethics I was talking about, the consensus, these are things that require intellectual muscle building. And we do this by adopting a pattern language. We adopt a sacred walk. We adopt a sacred talk in a very particular manner. You know, almost all Namenha, active Namenha that you'll meet, will be familiar with a specific pattern.
Yeah, it's something that we've really worked on over the years. I know that. I mean, that was part of that group, mm-hmm. helping, you know, to create those systems and put them in place. So were you. And, you know,
yeah.
you know, as you were, you know, developing, as you were learning to, so you can take over that position. And, yeah, it's pretty amazing the work we do. I always stress that pattern language is super important when we have our chapter meetings, because people don't understand that. I'm glad you gave us a little clarification.
Right, yeah.
It's absolutely right.
And you mentioned the curriculum, so that implies that we have an educational track, and indeed we do. We have the University of Namenha, which is a accredited university. There are numerous tracks within there for educating our ministers and helping them to build themselves up.
Our organization, as you guys know, we have the obligatory curriculum. It's mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to, excuse me, frog in the throat. If a person
Ribbit.
Is going to, if they're going to pursue a ministry of healing, they really, really need to know what they're doing. They really need to know what it means to do exactly that. You know, if they're going to pose a religious defense, they're going to adopt indigenous healing practices. Indigenous spiritual practices, it's not enough in today's highly volatile world to simply say that they are this and flash a card or a certificate. You know, it's not enough just to have paper. There has to be practices behind it. And in order for our principles, our universal principles, to be propagated, we have to practice them a lot, and that's what our curriculum does. It forces us to really look inside and really practice over and over until we have internalized the very things that make us Namenha.
Very good. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your free online holistic publication resource radio for trusting your intuition, achieving self-discovery, and following your soul self.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com, your free online resource for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. WithInsights Radio is a listener-supported radio station, and your donations are greatly appreciated. We cover a variety of topics, interviews surrounding the metaphysical and holistic and natural medicine, alternative healing modalities, and much more. Thank you for tuning in to WithInsightsRadio.com.
Welcome back to With Insights Radio. I'm Iggy Garcia.
And I'm David Tucros.
All right. We are live here in Columbus, Ohio, in a secret location, which nobody knows except for us three, actually, and the dog. So we're here talking with Jonathan Landis. He's the elected principal medicine chief of the Native American Church Indigenous Traditional Organization of Namenha. And he is sharing with us some tidbits and information that are super important, you know, for people, for Namenha to know, and for people who are curious about Namenha who want to join Namenha. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people who want to join, and there's always questions
right. When
you don't know somebody. But one of the biggest questions that we stumble upon as practitioners, as ministers, medicine people who do this work, myself being from Peru, and bringing my traditions and sharing and into Namenha, we run into First Nation people sometimes, or people who are descendant of First Nation people, and they come across very volatile towards us.
Sometimes, yes.
At times. So, Chief, I want you to take us there a little bit. So How do you deal with that? I know that you've had those issues, possibly. I'm not sure. I can't speak for you, but I know I have had those issues.
As have I.
When encountering people from First Nations?
Yes.
Most of them, quite literally, really don't involve themselves with organizations like ourselves. Most of them involve themselves in their own restorative processes, and they have little time for those of us who are trying to restore some of our more remote ancestry. I treat them always with the highest respect because they, despite all the attempts that have been made against them in the past, especially the Native Americans, to eliminate some of their culture, if not all of their culture, the fact that they feel so passionate about the customs they may feel are being appropriated by, you know, the non-Native Americans, the fact that they feel so passionate about it means they care an awful lot about their culture. I have to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they like my demeanor or not is not something I can do anything about.
Correct.
True.
Sure.
Very true.
But we don't appropriate other people's practices. And the Menha, we try to restore our own. And there's the funny thing about indigenous peoples. And the funny thing is, and we learn this in the Menha, to see the patterns, to see similarities. And that's what gets, in my experience, that is what sparks a little contention between ourselves and the First Nations, is that some of the things that we attempt to restore in our own way can seem very, very similar to the things mm-hmm. that they are themselves trying to restore. And there's always the trademark battle. You know, who had what first, and who should mm-hmm. have this, and who should not say that. You know, Itsipi and the Lakota Inipi, these are things that we deal with all the time because the word is so similar.
So what you're saying is they actually trademarked these particular ceremonies, the naming of the ceremonies or the ceremonies themselves?
In many cases, both. The Lakota Sioux, there was a determination made within one of their, I'm used to saying great council, they don't have great councils, one of their powwows, where many of their medicine men met together, and it was decided that it was time to share the message of Inipi, share the message of their medicine to the world. But then they had a few activists who went out there and declared that no one who was not trained under the Lakota Sioux could perform Sweat Lodge. I mean, they had some people, not with authority from their elders, but who themselves, under their own authority, decided to declare in very public settings, nobody could do Sweat Lodge without authority from the Sioux, unless they were of another tribe that did Sweat Lodge. And so the Menha has, some of our ministers have butted heads a little bit against the Lakota, these particular Lakota, not the Lakota in general. The Lakota have been actually very... very congenial, but a couple of their medicine men really don't appreciate that we who are not blooded Native American perform a Sweat Lodge purification ceremony without authority from the Sioux. And I don't really understand the source of that contention myself, because our purification ceremony, I mean, Chief, you are the chief of that of our ECP society, and you can tell anybody right. that it's nothing like a Lakota sweat.
Nothing.
We don't do anything. Yeah, yeah. But you still have the trademarking thing. You know, some of mm-hmm. these things have been in their cultures for so long that anybody who's not Native American jumps in and tries to either emulate them or duplicate them. And, you know, they want the name of where it came from on the brand. They want the origin on the brand. They mm-hmm. want to, and they see it as defending their original culture.
Well, you know, Sweat Lodge,
that's how they perceive it. Yeah.
An oldest practice is even, I mean, Peru, parts of Europe.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's not
Siberia.
It's sweat lodge is a very ancient process. It's not like, you know, it was just invented by one group of people. And you know, one time we were all together.
Right,
we were all my
right.
relations. My biggest thing is all my relations, but not you. Sometimes we run into that.
Almost all my relations.
Are you open to taking any questions online?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. For the listeners who are tuning in, we are not going to do any readings. So if you have a question for Jonathan, please ask a question and please be polite. You know, and if not, I'll just hang up on you. So we're going to take some callers here and, you know, just ask your question and he'll try to answer the best of his ability.
Or I'll ramble.
Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. You have a question for Chief?
Yes. Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for having your show today.
You're welcome.
Yes. I would like to ask about a relationship with my boyfriend, Sean.
Well, you might have to call in tomorrow's show at noon.
Oh, okay.
We're not taking any readings, but I'm sure Sean's not going anywhere if you need an answer for that. All right? Take care.
Bless you. Yeah.
That was a popcorn reading.
Yeah. Unless you've got something to say, you might have some insight there. I don't know.
I love it. Well, everybody hung up. They almost have 100 readers. So.
Well, I've got, you know, I wanted to back up a little bit and kind of talk about the history of the Nemanja. We say we have traditions and we have a culture that we're bringing back into the modern age, a band of healers. So where do we draw that history from, and how do we know, you know, our background, so to speak?
Well, we know some of our background from President Cloud Piler's heritage, his bloodline back to Chief Joseph. Much of that family history has been recorded in modern history texts. But there's also been a translation effort made within the last, you know, 13, 14 years between President Cloud Piler and various others in South America and Tibet and a few others, involving the restoration of further back bloodlines, genealogy, family histories, but more than anything, legends dating all way, way, way back. And at least as close to an accurate an interpretation as we can make of these legends, that's what they boil down to. Almost everything in the Nemanja that has been so effective, such as our consensus council system and our spiritual adoption and, you know, various forms of the healing, the ceremonies that we use, come from these legends. We try to, and this is where our Nemanja heritage comes from ancient stories that we're pulling up out of the dust of ages.
Mm-hmm.
That
okay.
is an ongoing work, yeah. We don't have any claim to actual tribal recognition. We have medicine people who are recognized and affiliated with tribes, honored by tribes, and through them, Nemanja is honored. But as far as actual tribal affiliation, the closest we get as an organization is through President Cloudpiler, who's a quarter Nez Perce. But at such low blood quanta, as far as the tribes are concerned, that they don't even have him on the rolls. Mm. We have to draw. We've drawn our Nemanja culture, our Nemanja practices and principles, at least the ones that are very universal. Ones that we can adopt universally. We've drawn those from legends arising out of family history.
Cool. So is that what the Mentai archives? Is that something that you're talking about in that sense?
Yeah, the sacred records. These are legends mm-hmm. directly from our family history.
Very good.
Okay. So we have celebrations throughout the year. We have, you might say, equinox and solstice celebrations that we recognize in our own unique way. We have gatherings that we bring together. We have, of course, our chapter house meetings, but we have the Great Council in September where any Nemanja who can come is invited. We can bring guests if it's open, you know, to to people who are not Nemenha to come and see our process and experience, you know, who we are in that setting. So we have a sort of a center there in Stockton, Missouri, where, you know, we have living land. You know, people who are on the land living and you know, being as close as they can to it. So, but we also have, like, spokes of the wheel. We have different chapter houses around. Our chapter house here in Columbus is more or less the Northeast Regional chapter house, the Condor Eagle chapter house.
We're the Midwest Nemenha.
Woohoo! Midwest rules, man. Well, you know, we're fun, and we bring a different flavor to everything. So, you know, we're happy to just to be a part of it. And but we are also finding that there are new ceremonies and new dances and new ways of you know, expressing what we feel spirit is prompting us to express, and those things are important to us. So I think that as we evolve forward, it's important to record those, to you know, to put them in some format within the Nemenha itself, to allow for these new ceremonies and dances and songs and drumming rhythms that we have discovered to be archived, to be, even be, you know, taught and shared. So that's something that I can see happening organically as we go forward.
Absolutely, absolutely. There's restorative work. And that's what we call it, restorative work from numerous angles. People who are rising into their own and realizing they have direct link to their ancestors in ways that sometimes they didn't even imagine before they joined Nemenha. Many people in Nemenha started out with a basis for some cultural, some indigenous practices, like Chief Iggy, you come from Peru, very rich cultural background there. And others are... Guldal, a good friend of mine, she's from Turkey, and she brings a rich cultural background. But a lot of people in Nemenha, when they begin, they find they are exploring, they're discovering what makes them who they are. And little ways down the road, they start discovering they have distinct healing talents that they can use in celebrations. And a lot of these are taking the form of, you know, drum medicine, or dances, or art, or sometimes it's just counseling, and sometimes it's just a hug. You know, things that just emerge seemingly out of nowhere. You know, that we're seeing this all over the place, and we in Nemenha are lucky because we see this often.
Explain to us what Wayakan is.
Wayakan is the act, is the action of receiving, you know, from divine influence or intuition or just, excuse me, from a good book. Wayakan is that transferal of information, data that's not necessarily at our disposal at the moment, into our minds, into our hearts for use in ways that we really hadn't considered before. So intuition is a really good example where suddenly there is available information that we didn't have before or hadn't considered before. In Nemenha, we call this Wayakan. Wayakan is a phrase that means the spirit relays to me, or the spirit conveys. It is the holy conveyance of divine information. And it has a very very broad, very universal meaning to it, because it can be applied to just about any process that sounds or feels very similar to that. We obsess a lot about it in the Nemenha.
Mm-hmm. So someone could feel just moved by spirit to speak words or to perform a dance or to give a healing of some sort that they may not even know where it comes from. That could be the inspiration of Wayakan.
That we call that Wayakan. That's right.
Wayakan.
It's not coming from, the local universe, as I call it. It's not coming from the space in front of them. It's not coming from the stuff they can see and touch and they can cognitively interact with on a physical level. This is, excuse me, a frog in the throat. The it's information in the non-local universe that somehow, in whatever instance, in whatever vehicle, whatever mechanism, has opened to them. And they have information they did not have before that they didn't get out of this, the stuff in front of them.
Right. Yep.
Awesome. So where would you like to take us now, Chief? Something that maybe it's on your mind that you want to share that you weren't able to?
I believe there was concern about about appropriating. We addressed that a little bit. Appropriating cultural
mm-hmm.
customs and disrespecting tribes and disrespecting elders and medicine people from other tribes.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that can be said on that point. Nemenha has always really tried to remain respectful of these people in the way we address them, but we have to work with people. We have to try to see things from their point of view, obviously. But the best thing we can say is, I'm sorry you feel that way, but it really has nothing to do with you and your people. We're honored that you feel that way about your customs, and we're honored that you think our customs are so close to yours. I mean, that is amazing that they are so similar, but this really has nothing to do with you.
Right. Very
good. That can get people pretty upset, unfortunately.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, well, usually when you're in that situation, you know, sometimes people are open to discussion, but more often they're just open. They just want to prove you wrong. So, you know,
right.
You're not really. It's not really a discussion you're going to win them over with. But it's, if you set those healthy boundaries and go, you know, this is, as you said, you know, I respect and honor your culture, but this is really my culture that we're talking about, and I don't feel moved to change it. You know, even though it is similar to yours, it is not the same. It comes from our own tradition, background, and our own wake and experience too.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we have to stand a little bit of our ground there and say, no, this is where we are in our limitations. This is ours. So,
yeah. Then a question for you, Chief. I know that part of our curriculum is some of the important factors of is creating a bundle story, and you know, creating the medicine wheel and creating our bundles. Explain to us a little bit why these certain things are so important that we do these things.
I was hoping you'd bring that one up. The medicine bundle is a particularly favorite topic of mine. The medicine bundle has a couple of purposes. One, it is a pattern of behavior. It is a pattern that all Nemenha share. Every single Nemenha minister, every single Nemenha medicine man, medicine woman, everyone in Nemenha does this funny thing, and that is build themselves a medicine bundle. And not only is it reinforcing because of the shared use of the thing, that everybody has one, but it's also reinforcing the fact that as pattern language, we make very significant spiritual and religious representations in a formal ceremony. That if we were to practice natural healing where it's otherwise regulated out of existence in ceremony, because of the virtues of a bundle ceremony, we have the ability to practice as a minister, where otherwise we wouldn't be able to touch on natural healing at all. So that's one of the major benefits of the bundle ceremony. But it also, it's twofold. It also causes one, it forces one to look deeply inside oneself and figure out the little nuances of what makes us tick, because not just enough to have a shopping list of items that you wrap in a blanket and call it a medicine bundle.
Mm-hmm.
The medicine bundle has a ceremony. It has a life of its own that embodies such very personal, and spiritual elements. No, there's something we like to say in Nemenha, no two medicine bundles are or ought ever to be the same, and I have only seen the same medicine bundles maybe twice in all the years I've been Nemenha, and that's because they were so literal-minded, they followed the instructions exactly as they were in the book.
I'm sorry.
I'm No, yours is definitely not one of them, Iggy. No. That, you know, that's a good thing, because, you know, when I was called upon to create my medicine bundle, I opened myself up to spirit and I just said, okay, inspire me, you know, and I was so inspired by it. It took me just a day to find my own colors of my medicine wheel, the directions, what they meant, the totem animals, the stones that I have, just all those things just came to me in a rush of inspiration, and it was freeing. It was very liberating to open myself up to that and to be so a part of this organization and this family and still be so individual and able to share what I felt was important with other people and see what they felt was important when I looked in their medicine bundle. I've told people that when you look into our medicine bundles, you're looking into our soul, into our hearts, into our spiritual background.
Yes.
You know, that you can see so much in there, and that's why they are so different.
Yeah, that's right. One of the best things, we just had our great council just this last month, and one of the best things that I love about the Great Council is when everybody pulls out their medicine bundles, or at any Nemenha event where we have all the medicine bundles, and I love peering into that piece of the person that they're presenting to the world, because it is so personal and it is so open, and it is so beautiful to see how different and how beautiful every single person is, you know, without sitting in a consultation room. You know, these are people, everybody with a medicine bundle, they have taken special thought as to what the elements in their bundle mean, whether it means anything to them or not. And so I'm envious of you, David, because you had a great experience where everything you needed for your bundle
right.
was laid out in front of you. Some of us, not the case.
It's evolving still.
My first medicine bundle was a small Navajo rug that my siblings bought for me, because apparently I was gravitating toward it in the Navajo shop, and I didn't have the money for it, and I was kind of depressed about it, I guess. I don't remember all the details about the event myself, but I was sitting out in the car moping, I think, and my siblings went inside and they bought this little Navajo rug for me. I carried that thing with me for 4 or 5 years before I did anything with it. And I was having a very difficult time internalizing the elements that would create a medicine bundle. And because my first, despite the fact that I was deeply immersed in the restorative work of Nemenha, and I was assisting Cloud Piler right and left with as many things as I could, I was having a hard time personally taking an inanimate object and giving it anything more than a dollar value. You know, I'd start with a bead, and I'd remember this bead cost me 10 cents. What the heck is this bead supposed to mean to me? But I've got it, and I've got this Navajo rug, and the rug is empty, and I know I'm supposed to be doing this thing because we're all supposed to do this thing, and I just had no clue starting out, even though I had worked so closely with the Mother's Council, the first Mother's Council, and with President Cloudfiler for so many years, bringing things about the way they are now. But at first, you know, it was a stretch to give any spiritual value to the metaphor that a single inanimate object could represent. But once I started, I couldn't stop. Once I made that first step, it didn't flood in like it did you, David.
Yeah.
It came piece by piece, little bit by little bit, and now I'm an addict. And now I can't stop.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's true too that sometimes objects in our bundles call to be given to other people. We receive and we give. So our bundles do change over time.
Yep.
They do, you know, and they reflect more of our own growth. And maybe I've got a little piece of something that I hold value to, and it's in there, you know. And then some other time, I see someone and something that just calls to me to go, here, you need this, you know, and I'll offer it to them. And it's a giving and receiving that takes place, and very organic, so very living.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. One of the most beautiful stories that I recall about struggles with building a medicine bundle, and these are from people like myself who don't really just on our own initiative, we really struggle with setting things apart as anything more than the highly physical object that they are. You know, some of us struggle quite avidly with metaphors. You know, we're very literal-minded, very linear-minded. Metaphors end up going in one ear and out the other because we have more important things to do. But one of the most beautiful stories I remember was for the medicine bundle ceremony, we had a Carmelite nun who struggled with the medicine wheel and medicine bundle, and she fretted about it for months and months, and she burst into tears anytime we were talking to her, and nothing we said could make her feel better or help her, you know, just really start with some basic stuff. And so finally she took it to her bishop, and she showed him the books, and she showed him the works, and she described what she was going through and how she thought Namenha was doing such amazing things for her, and it was expanding her spirituality, but she could not rectify, she could not justify taking on these other spiritual practices because it did not conform to her Catholicism. And the bishop asked for her rosary, and she handed him her rosary, and he laid it on the desk in front of him and wrapped the beads around the cross. That is this not a medicine wheel? And it was just an eye opener for her. It illuminated the entire process. She said, "Oh my gosh, this is supposed to be me." Like, yes, that's exactly what it's supposed to be. That's why bundles are a favorite topic of mine.
Right.
We do have a caller. Let's see if they have a question.
Okay.
Cool.
Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys.
Hey, what's
up?
What's going on?
Great show.
Thank you.
I had a question. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi. What can I do
and
for
Moni,
you?
I know you're in there. well, I just wanted to ask you if a person, you know, has a strong interest as far as joining the organization, what are the first steps that person's going to do according to, like, your protocol, I guess, of a new person wanting to become a member? What do they have to do just the order of the steps, I guess, the basics?
Wow. Yeah, that's a very good question. And the answers are pretty much the same as any minister in the Namenha will tell you. The very first thing we tell you is go to our website and read everything. Namenha is very involved. We have a lot of principles that individuals need to harmonize with. We have made them as universal as we could possibly make them. But you have to make sure before requesting spiritual adoption, an interested individual has to be sure that they can wholeheartedly agree with the statements and the principles of Namenha, because we are, it's not a membership club. This is a family. This is a sacred order.
Right.
And we take the covenant of spiritual adoption very, very seriously. And that's reflected and supported by the fact that when someone leaves Namenha or is removed from Namenha, we perform a funerary ceremony for them. We consider that a saddening, and we exercise the sadness in funeral for that individual. The principles that we follow, that we adhere to, are in our constitution, in our code of ethics, in our formal request for spiritual adoption. The paperwork is on the website. And there are very specific tenets that anybody who's interested in the Namenha has to really and spiritually agree with. You know, we don't want anybody wanting to join the Namenha because they think they're going to get a get out of jail free card or a tax dodge or just because it's Native American-ish, and they want to, you know, they want to do something that's exotic and new for a time.
Right.
You know, we want people to diligently geek week and pray mightily as to whether this is the path for them, because it's not the only path to enlightenment. There are as many paths to enlightenment as there are sands in the sea, but Nemenha is a very good one. But you, before you step on the path, make sure that it is the right one for you.
So let's say the person, you know, reads everything and likes everything and agrees, and then what's the next steps after that then?
We would recommend, and we do recommend this, that they seek out a Peli in the Nemenha, either a leader or an officer in one of our chapters, and have a face-to-face conversation with one of our leaders. That's what Peli means, is a leader. And have a face-to-face conversation, get to know a person that's actively engaged in the Nemenha, exchange some stories, talk about what your reasons for joining, and if it feels right, if Weyakin is good and it is the right thing to do, then the next step is to formally request spiritual adoption for the church. And that's sending in that formal request to the church through the university.
Okay. Well, I think that answered most of my questions. Thank you for that. That's good to know. Yeah. And that's good for listeners to know. So carry on and have a good night.
You too.
Thank you.
Thank
you,
Adriana. And love and peace.
All right.
Love and peace. That's our lion-hearted friend there.
That's friend Adriana.
Yes. So that's while we're on the subject.
Yeah, okay.
That's her.
She felt familiar, and I've never actually met her, so.
Almost got her to go to Great Council.
Yeah, well, I don't think you'll have to work much harder on it to get to the next one, maybe.
Yeah.
So while we're on the subject of becoming Nemenha or entering into it, what would you say to someone who does not consider themselves a healer but still finds themselves attracted to what Nemenha is all about, wants to walk in the Nemenha way? You know, I almost think of myself like that, because there are things that I can do. I have some Reiki background, but really I'm so attracted to just the culture, the people, the possibility of re-establishing this ancient people, and being a part of that is exciting to me, but I don't really look at myself, when I think of myself, as a formal healer per se.
Hold that thought, both of you.
Okay,
we're going to take a quick break, like 16 seconds, and then Jonathan can answer that question.
Okay.
All right, let's give him a break and get a glass of water.
Yes, please.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Network, your free online holistic publication resource radio for trusting your intuition, achieving self-discovery, and following your soul self.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com, your free online resource for achieving self-discovery and inspiration. WithInsights Radio is a listener-supported radio station, and your donations are greatly appreciated. We cover a variety of topics, interviews surrounding the metaphysical and holistic and natural medicine, alternative healing modalities, and much more. Thank you for tuning in to WithInsightsRadio.com.
And we are back here on With Insights Radio.
Yes, we are.
We are talking to Jonathan Landis, who is the EPMC, or the Elected Principal Medicine Chief of the Nemenha, and just listening and learning and discussing some wonderful things here. Very honored to have him with us tonight. And I did ask a question about what would you say to someone who does not consider themselves a healer? I know we have many healing societies within the Nemenha that are you know, for Reiki and massage and natural medicines and things like that. But if someone just feels drawn to us, you know, what would you say to them?
I would say, get out of your own way. You are one. The Nemenha fivefold mission is a fivefold mission for a very particular reason. We don't consider healing just isolated to healing a person or healing multiple people. there is healing on any number of levels. And we have conveniently identified five of the infinite levels of healing. The fivefold mission is that, healing the individual. Those are usually the practitioners who deal with people on a one-on-one basis, or a personal healer, someone who's working on healing themselves. The healing doesn't have to be a physical healing either. It can be a spiritual healing, emotional healing, energetic healing. You know, the healing is, for Namenha, a process of emergence. And this is a phrase, this is a phrase we use a lot. Emergence is moving from one state of existence, or one state or condition, into another one that is better, greater, improved, healthier, happier, more peaceful. This is emergence, moving from one state into another. And the fivefold mission, we challenge people. Anytime I hear of someone who feels like, oh, I just don't consider myself a healer per se, you know, I kind of do my own thing, but I really like you said, Dave, I really like the culture. I really like the restorative work of the culture. And it's interesting because I just had a conversation recently with a fellow minister who is struggling with something along similar lines. They're not a practitioner of anything. They don't have children, so they don't minister to themselves, their family. So he really doesn't know why he's in Namenha, other than he loves the tenets and principles of Namenha, but he struggles every time we say that we're all healers. Well, he called me up the other day and he says, I just don't feel that I'm a healer. And I said, I challenge you to prove to me that you're not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fivefold mission, what do you do for yourself that you would say is that you prove to me that you're not healing yourself? Or what do you do every day? Well, I said, in Namenha, what do you do every day? Well, I open my bundle every day because I know I'm supposed to. And I said, do you feel fulfilled by that? Do you feel like you're getting closer to your deity? The gentleman was Christian. And he's like, well, I do, actually. I do. I said, is that not healing? Well, I wasn't really sick to begin with. I'm like, so? You don't have to be sick to be healing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I see. Well, I really don't work on anybody. I really don't study anything that much. I really just don't see how I'm a healer. And so that's what I did. I challenged him to take 5 points of the fivefold mission, go through his daily walk and his daily talk, and hunt down those things that could be classified as healing, things that are corrective and supportive, things that are uplifting, because these are very healing things. And so for people who wonder whether they're a healer or not, I say, get out of your own way. You are one. You just, your mission is just to find out how and who.
Get your butt out of the way.
That's right.
Cut that anchor.
Well, I will say that, for me, this has been evolving too, is that drumming has been such a very healing thing for myself as an individual, and I've seen the power of drumming draw people together. So we're building community, we're healing our community and our society by having these drum circles that, and even last night when we had our Namenha meeting, a few people just wandered over because they were drawn to us by what we were doing and how we were demonstrating our ways with one another. And that, to me, is a very healing thing, too, because there's a hunger out there for what we have to offer, you know, and what we can do. So through our drumming, we've drawn people together. We do an actual physical drum healing where we have people lay around our mother drum like spokes on a wheel, and that's a very powerful thing as well. And so... yes, I guess I have become a healer through that. So, you know, in spite of myself. Yeah, that's right. That's right. But you know, it comes in very unorthodox or you can't really anticipate sometimes how that's going to come into your life. So, I say just people
that
be open.
That is exactly right. Yeah.
That's right. You know, be open. Put yourself in that mode, and then it will come to you. So.
I love it. Actually, he took part in a ceremony yesterday. You know, you did the Ohio Health.
Oh, right. Yeah, you know, we've been doing this with hospice, the local hospice here with Ohio Health, Kobacker House, where they have called upon us to do a grieving drumming, more or less, you know, and they also have something they call the morning walk, as in morning, as in feeling sad, that they do in the afternoons quarterly. Mm-hmm. So along the way, they have four stops, and those four stops can correspond to the four directions, anything, the four seasons. They were doing four states of grief yesterday. So I was called upon to bring one of our mother drums there and perform a little anger drumming. So I just kind of let myself get into it and get, you know, kind of do angry drumming for a while, and then I just kind of calm down and slow down. And then people, as they were walking by, were offered the chance to take one of our beaters and just hit the drum a few times, you know, let a little bit out, you know, and that was very healing too.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's very powerful. It seems simple, but it's very powerful, and people do connect with it, no matter what culture you come from. I tell people, drumming's in our DNA, so it's going to affect you.
It's
going to affect you and touch you in some way, you know. So that, yeah. Now I'm all kinds of healing. So,
yeah, and there really is nothing simple about it, and that's hard for some people to grasp. There is nothing simple about the drum song. There's nothing simple about engaging people in a healing work that takes them maybe sometimes just outside their area of comfort. You know, there's nothing simple about someone who has that aha moment where something clicks. It is not simple. It's cosmic.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, that was.
Watching it in children.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, they're the most open, and really they teach us a lot, you know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great Council was cool because I got to teach it was a children's drumming circle. I got to learn from the kids. They taught me a lot.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah. I went to a chapter house meeting here in Springfield, Missouri. And I'm in Arnica chapter, but the two chapters are really close together. And in Springfield, Missouri, they were talking about some of the stuff that was going on at Great Council. And the drum circles were so inspiring to some of these people that they were saying, oh, we really need to start working on a drum circle. But not one of them was musical. Not one of them knew how to keep a beat. And so all of them were just bashing themselves, and they're like, we'll never be able to pull this together because none of us are musicians. And I kind of raised my hand a little bit, and I said, can I tell a story, just a little one? And I told them the story of a Great Council when all these kids were playing, and it was just kind of a mess. And then after a little while, it was on rhythm. Mm-hmm. All these kids. We had my Declan, he's big for his age, and he's awkward, and he's as clumsy as I am, poor kid. And after a little while of being a little clumsy, it didn't matter. He fell in sync, he fell into the rhythm, and he was hitting that little djembe that I bought for him, and he was right on beat. And we had autistic kids in the crowd, and they were on beat, and they were synced in. And so I was describing this to them there in the Springfield chapter, and their eyes started to light up, and I said, you have no idea what you're capable of until you give it a try. If this is something that feels good and it had such an impact on you, don't destroy it because you're not qualified.
Right. Well, I'll tell my little drum story then, too, because for, I'd say, the first half a century of my life, I never thought that I had any rhythm at all. I didn't consider myself musical in the slightest. My outlet was art and writing, and you know, I just put music to the side. I liked to listen to it, but I didn't think I could hold the beat at all. And then upon entering the Nemenha, you know, I have my little hoop drum, so I would be playing that, you know, and that was pretty simple to keep a beat with, you know, and I connected with that. And then I saw all my friends around me were playing these djembes, and I'm like, wow, that's pretty neat. You know, I wonder if I could do that. You know, so I sat myself down one day in the drum circle, and I took a spare djembe, and I was trying to keep up with the beat and playing it as best I could, and you know, and And then after a while, I'm like, well, who's playing that djembe? That sounds pretty good. And I look down, and it was me. So your inner drummer does come out. You know, you have an inner drummer in you that will definitely overcome any of your conscious mind and the obstacles you place in your way.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah, I use that example in talking to people about whether they're becoming a healer or not. I mean, once you get started, and it's like myself with a medicine bundle. Once I got started, I couldn't stop. My bundle has made three or four major transitions in its evolution, reflecting my own evolution as a healer. And, you know, once you take that step, once you exercise the courage to see the really remarkable and powerful person that we are, that every single human being and every single living thing on the planet is, once we take that step and acknowledge that, who knows what talents and gifts can emerge out of that. And
absolutely.
Once we have done that, once we have taken that step, we are, without a doubt, irrefutably, healers. And the whole universe opens up. Sometimes in ways that can be terrifying to behold, and others that are just amazing.
Right, right. And I guess my point is, too, that you're never too old. You know, your life is always, as long as there's life in you, there's the possibility that you can discover amazing things about yourself and potentials you never even imagined that you had. If you can, as you said, get out of your own way. Don't let your conscious mind talk you down, and just open up to that wake and that's around you all the time.
Awesome. Everybody knows I love drumming.
Yeah. I think you came out of the womb drumming. Yeah.
I came out of the womb drumming. Yeah, well, while he was doing the drumming, I was teaching drumming at another school for gifted, like, little kids who are preschoolers, 3 to 6. I was actually training the teachers how to teach the kids how to drum. I was with Mary and Adriana. We went there, and we split our forces up a little bit, and we were sharing. And then I threw Adriana into the fire and had her teach a little bit of the drumming. And she said, well, you do it better. And I didn't say anything to her. It was funny. And she taught it. You know? So it's good to see people grow in their passion and to see my friends teaching the class, to watch Mary and Adriana actually kind of like take over of sorts in a good way, not in a bad way, but just like they just spoke. It was beautiful. Mary explaining, you know, what she gets out of it, how she does it, and it was just neat. Isn't it to sit back? I was like a proud dad.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just like, yay! You know, so it was really cool.
Yeah,
so, Chief, would like to give you the floor to give some final thoughts about Nemanja and some things that you maybe want to share. And you have the floor.
Well, thank you, Chief. The biggest thing that the biggest thing that I focus on is, and I encourage our fellows and those who are interested, is to look inside, see the people they are, see the people they could be, criticism, not with an eye to scrutiny, but really to see the unknown. And I've seen some remarkable things since the inception of the Nemanja and before that, but nothing like what I'm seeing being revealed in my own life as a parent in the Nemanja. I have been part of a few formal religions, and I'm still a member of one of them. But for me, the Nemanja religion has become my religion, and this is something that's happened to me and my family, and to see it begin to blossom in my family. Like this Sunday morning, it was beautiful out here in Missouri, and it gets really, really humid here.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you feel like you're in the bath, in the spa, and there should be wind blowing or something, and you're just sweating, but you're not sweating because the air is that moist. That's Missouri in summer. That's Missouri in fall. But this last Sunday was just clear and fresh, and the sun was shining, and I took the kids outside. My wife was inside, and she was sleeping in, and she never gets to do that ever. So we just vacated and let her sleep. But and I told the kids as I went to my car, we're in a little apartment place here, and there's a little playground outside. I told them that we're going to pray first, and because I try to make a habit of making setting apart one, at least one special day in a week, and that's just from some of my religious and cultural background. But I said we're going to pray first, and then you guys can go play. And they're like, "Okay, Daddy. Okay, awesome." And we ran over to the playground. I opened up my medicine bundle, and I had all of my odds and ends and paraphernalia and all the different elements that make my medicine bundle. And my kids sat there. They just watched, and they fingered, and they asked questions. And we wear a prayer shawl when we pray. And I have 7 prayers that I keep nice and short and sweet for the kids. And they express essential Nemenha tenets, Nemenha principles, and I use it as a teaching tool for my kids. But when we were all done, they went off and they played. My daughter comes back to me, and she's 5, almost 5, and she had this puzzled look on her face, and she sat down next to me, and I said, "What's the matter, sweetie?" And she said, "Can I hold the grandmother? I have this grandmother effigy doll that was given to me by a very good friend, and the doll comes from Turkey, and it is the embodiment of the ultimate expression of intrinsic village wisdom, family wisdom. The old matriarch contains that wisdom in her very skin. That's what this effigy doll represented to me, very personally significant." And so I handed it to her, and she was looking at it, and she commented that it doesn't have any eyebrows because its head is made of beadwork. And so it had points, colored points, that had eyes and a mouth, etc., but nothing in great detail. She's like, "Why doesn't she have eyebrows? Why doesn't she have a nose? Why doesn't she have a chin?" And so she was scrutinizing the doll pretty severely at first, and then as I was watching her, she got this puzzle, the puzzled look on her face got a little more severe, and then almost a little sad. And she looked at me and she said, "Daddy, who takes care of Grandma? When I'm sick, you and Mom take care of me. When Declan is sick, I help you take care of him. Who takes care of Grandma?" And I was thinking of my mom, and so I said, "Well, Grandpa takes care of Grandma for the most part, Grandma Nell, and, you know, we help when we can." And she shook her head. She said, no, Grandma Earth. Who takes care of Grandma Earth?" And I was just struck. It's really hard to make me speechless. My little girl made me speechless.
Wow.
And I said, "And we're very Christian." And I said, "Well, she's got Jesus to help her. She's got Jesus to help her, and we help her. We take care of her." And Jaden pointed at some disgusting cigarette butts stuck in the ground next to the playground, and she got really sad. Why would they do that to Grandmother Earth? And there was trash over there, and I could just see her eyes tracking back and forth. And then she looked up at me, and she was almost pleading, and she's like, "Do you think Jesus would let me take care of Grandmother Earth too?" So that was my Sunday.
Wow.
I just about cried.
Yeah, you got this almost.
That was awesome.
That's amazing. No. That's amazing.
And if I didn't open my bundle with my kids, if I didn't share my spirituality in such a personal manner that way, if they didn't feel comfortable like that with me, I might have missed that. And I was just, that's the thought that's been in my mind since yesterday, all day today. Very distracting at work. Just how significant and how cosmic that was. I mean, this is my little 5-year-old daughter who picked up a grandmother effigy doll. She knew the story behind it because I had told her the story. And she cared. She thought of Grandmother Earth as a person and really, really connected with Grandmother Earth.
And from the mouth of babes.
That's right. It made me look at those cigarette butts, because our whole apartment building's full of irresponsible smokers. They just throw their cigarette butts everywhere. And it made me look at those cigarette butts, and I just wanted to cry. Like, how could you? It was exactly what she said. Like, how could they do that to Grandmother Earth? And then when she gave me that look, and that the pleading in her eyes, as, you know, just wanting to know if Jesus would let her help take care of Grandmother Earth, I said, I'm pretty sure he'll let you, Bibbs. I'm pretty sure he'll be more than happy to let you help him take care of Grandmother Earth. So.
That is awesome. Yeah.
I'd like to invite you in the future, maybe once a month, maybe even if it's pre-recorded and you can send to us, something that you just kind of keep everybody up to date what's going on in MNH land, as I call it. Because I think it's important. You know, I think it's important, you know, as public relations chief as well here in Columbus, you know, working far from you, that might be a good tack, you know, to maybe once a month throw something on. Doesn't have to be long.
Absolutely.
Or you can just spend time with us.
I would be honored,
too.
Chief. Honored, yeah.
Or yeah, more stories
totally
like that.
Or more stories like that would be awesome. That's for sure.
Well, what a pleasure it's been to have you on tonight, and how informative, and this is just like conversing. Well, you are a friend, so it's like conversing with family and friends with you. And just want to thank you again for coming on our show. And as you, Iggy said, it's an open door. You're welcome anytime. Mm-hmm. And we want
to. Well, he has to.
Oh, he has to now. Okay.
Yes, Chief,
door's
right
open.
Away, Chief. Yep. Yep, absolutely. It is absolutely my pleasure.
Awesome.
So we
awesome.
Want to thank you for joining us, and we'll see you soon, bro.
All right. Yes. Hey, walk sacred, you guys.
You walk sacred, too.
Yes.
Goodbye. Thank you. Well, awesome.
Very awesome. Yeah, I just feel inspired, you know. Our chapter house has been doing things for a few years now, but I want to put out a call to any NEMNH who are listening, anyone who's interested in becoming NEMNH and really feels drawn to it. You know, first of all, to
Absolutely.
Go check out our websites, look at our documents, our core values, and, you know, as Chief was saying, you know, see if that resonates with you. But I want to call our members who haven't been so active, you know, for whatever reason, you know, because I've gone through that too. I've had my stages and, you know, my levels of participation, you know, but we are moving forward. We're evolving, and things are happening and changing so rapidly now that I want to open up the doors again and just invite you to come in and add your energy, add your unique experience, add who you are back into our fold. You know, you're always welcome. You're always a NEMNH, even if you've been out there being a lone wolf for whatever for a while. You know, come back home, touch base with us, let us once more embrace and become the family we are.
Yeah, Moni, you've been listening to our show.
Yes, absolutely.
So what do you think?
I liked it.
Good.
Very much. It's a lot. Everything kind of coincides together.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And the lone wolf, I understand that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very much. You know.
Awesome.
So, loved it. Thank you for that. Make him in.
For those of you who don't know Moni coming, she's actually going to have a show once a week on Thursdays. In the evening, I think it's 7, did we say 7 o'clock?
Yes. Yeah.
7 o'clock on Thursday, starting this Thursday.
Yeah.
She'll be giving readings and popcorn readings.
Uh-huh.
And then hopefully we direct people to
the
her
right
place
way.
Of work, the right way. To,
on their journey.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow we have our show, Lunchtime Wisdom Cafe. So we'll be on there with Mark. And then we segue Thursday with your new show, which is cool.
It's awesome. Can't wait.
And then Wednesday we have... I think Dawn is going to be on. She's doing the Gypsy Wagon, so she'll be sharing her tidbits and stuff. And then Friday we have Mark Matheny, down the rabbit hole with him. And then
it's always an interesting adventure.
Yeah. Then at midnight we have Mudtoe at Midnight with Todd Smith. He'll be sharing his 30-minute rants about his life and how he sees the world.
Very unique point of view from Todd.
A very unique Sasquatch medicine man point of view. Yes.
Right.
Yes. So I'm pretty excited. The direction with Insights is going. There's a lot of things happening. We're growing, and it's pretty exciting time. So, folks, just stay tuned because, you know,
you know,
to keep up with us, you're just going to have to listen to all the shows.
Right. You know, it reminds me of that river when you just start out in a little canoe and you're along the edge, but you start to get into the stream now, and the current's carrying you along, and the momentum's building, and, you know,
who knows what's ahead, rapids, a waterfall, or just
right.
could open up and just be an ocean, you know. So that's the adventure we're living, and it's exciting, and it's life itself. So I just invite you to stay tuned and come on, join us.
Absolutely. Well, we've got about 2 minutes. Give us a little preview of what you're going to be doing on your show.
Well, I like to move people forward in their life. A lot of questions today on the business in particular with what they're supposed to do for work. A lot of people are quitting their jobs, being released from their jobs, and they don't have anything means for monetary. So I like to put them back in perspective and work with the healing mm-hmm. also within their heart. You know, I think that's very important that they understand Reiki in all aspects. Mm-hmm. Reiki's a word, but yet it's all connects in the universe for us. Also then connecting with loved ones too. They've been coming through quite a bit lately.
Mm-hmm.
We just had one around our secret area here a few minutes ago. I actually saw go through your wall. So
very good.
So it was a good one, very good.
Mm-hmm.
The white spirit.
Nice.
It was your ancestor.
Good.
Honestly it was.
Well, I believe it.
But these guys are stars. I enjoyed this tonight very much.
Good,
and
good.
I'm just a servant. I'm just here to, you know, dish out whatever I can.
That's right. I'm here to
That's
serve.
That's awesome.
Here to serve as well.
It's very awesome.
So thank you for thank noticing you. Our talents and the fun that we have here on the show.
You do.
And,
I like
that's what we do here with Insights. We have fun. You know, that's always been our motto. Everybody has insights to share.
They do. Right.
Within us, we have some kind of gift, and the world's just waiting for you to hear. And
amazing.
With that, we'll say goodnight, and we'll see you tomorrow, and we'll see you next week.
Peace.
Peace and love.
Peace
out.